Spirit Blade Underground, episode 356. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 356.
Hello. Welcome to the Monitor Room with the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, the biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geekery, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community. You can check out ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franz, and from Spirit Blade Production, producing and everything, resorted, equipped, encouraged by our Christian Geek community, 11 more Christ, we're going to start with. Come. All right. I'm so sorry if this is your first episode. just listen to the beginning of the one before this, or maybe hopefully after this, and I'll be less busted. I'm freaking tired, man. As I'm recording this, I haven't even finished what I need to do to edit the video I'm going to put up today for Pillars of Eternity. I just wanted to do all my recording right now so I could just like relax and edit after that. But today on the show, if I can get it together, I'm going to be giving you my first five review, my first five main and five impressions of the first 5 hours of Pillars of Eternity. And you should be able to see the video of that also at YouTube. On the YouTube channel at Christian YouTube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And then also the first part of my thoughts on Dragon Age Inquisition, and just kind of the themes and the ideas that are being presented in Dragon Age Inquisition. That's going to be for our In Search of Truth segment this week. It's going to be a two-part segment. I'm going to do the first part this week, second part next week. So lots of video game stuff going on today, but I think stuff that, as far as like the Dragon Age Inquisition stuff, don't tune out, because that's just kind of going to be kind of an example of how I approach geek entertainment in general, just kind of what kinds of things pop out to me and what kinds of things I notice and how I process them. So I hope something in that will be useful to you as you do the same in the things that you like to geek out about. Okay, so lots of stuff. Let's get to it. Nice. Another achievement unlocked. I bet I got more achievements than anybody I know.
Yes, sitting in front of a video game for 5 hours a day is quite an achievement.
See, this is why I don't like talking to you.
Then why don't you spend more time with real people?
Because real people don't respond to console commands.
Wow, Peter. You unlocked yet another achievement. You must have more achievements than anyone you know. Behold, you are great, and greatly to be praised.
Yeah, better. Pillars of Eternity. I've been very excited about this game. I didn't back it, but it was kickstarted in, I want to say, like 2011, 2012, maybe 12, 30, 40, 50, I think 2012. And it is designed to be basically an advancement of the formula used in the Infinity Engine games for the PC, like of the 90s, like the late 90s, like Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, Icewind Dale 1 and 2, Planescape Torment. And a lot of the same people involved in those games created this one. And now, I'm not like a PC gamer. I wasn't the core audience for those games. I discovered them many years later. Those games were made using the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons system, most of them. They used a second edition for most of them, and then third edition for, like, I think Icewind Dale 2, and that was it. And I am not... I love paper and pencil RPGs, but I've never been heavy into Dungeons and Dragons. I've just started playing 5th edition just recently. So when I was playing those games, I was like, well, I love this as an RPG, but like these rules are like insane to try and figure out and navigate through. And they had a terminology that they didn't even bother explaining in the spells, and how, like, they wouldn't tell you how long like a round is. They would say spells last so many rounds or so many units of this or whatever. You know, but they don't explain what that is in game terms, you know? And so it was a complicated mess in many ways, but I still really found enjoyment in it, even though it It was clear I was not the target audience. It was clear I was really confused. And it was clear I was having way too much difficulty on, like, the easiest level compared to what I'm sure a lot of other gamers, you know, have had. I read online about people soloing through those games, you know, on, like, harder difficulties than I played on. And I played on the easiest one and would get frustrated and slaughtered repeatedly. And a lot of it had to do with, like, the status effects and stuff like that, which were just terrible. But anyway, I did another review about that if I remember, I'll put a link to or something. But anyway, but what I loved about the Infinity Engine games, I love the pause and play gameplay. I don't think I'm, you know, most of the time up for, like, a true turn-based you know, RPG, unless it's like the flashy, you know, games of, you know, yesteryear, the Japanese RPGs, where when you execute your move, there's crazy camera panning and all kinds of swirly dirlies and stuff, and it's, you know, just a very cinematic kind of crazy visual experience. But when it's just like this isometric, you know, third person kind of deal, it just feels a little bit stale to just be in turn-based mode for me. I don't know. I'm going to try what is it called? Dragon something, Shadow Run, which has nothing to do with dragon anything. But anyway, I still have yet to try that. But that formula hasn't worked for me, but the pause and play formula I really dig. And it keeps the action moving, but at the same time, I can pause any time and think about what I'm going to do. I really love the music and the sound and the visual aesthetic of the original Infinity Engine games. I love the character class options and all the different ways you could progress those characters. I love the looting. I love games with looting and upgrading with your loot. And I love the exploration and the freedom that you had in those games. Now, my wish list for improvements over the Infinity Engine games with Pillars of Eternity was, first, a comprehensible magic and rules system. I already explained my problem with that, so I just wanted something that was going to be streamlined and just make sense, that I wouldn't have to, like, dive through these endless stream of menus to try and figure out what the heck they're talking about so I can pick the proper spell for the occasion, you know? I also wanted it to be less difficult on easy. If you're watching this and you were just had no problem with the difficulty on Baldur's Gate and those games, okay, just stop now. I'm a big idiot. This video is not for you. It's for people that had difficulty with those games, or people who have never played any of those kinds of games, that maybe like Dragon Age Origins and didn't play that always on the hardest difficulty, but they like the exploring and the looting and all those kinds of other things that came with those games. I'm talking to you, not you other folks. You're too smart for me. Okay, so I was less difficult on easy. I also want it to be more forgiving, or as far as like the status ailments, or I want the status ailments to be more easily cured. And then finally, number four, I want low system requirements so that I can take it around with my laptop. Like, I've got used to taking so many great classic games from GOG.com around on. So now more than half of those, or at least half of those, I think, were promised by the Obsidian. So, I mean, this should be like no-brainers, right? Well, let's find out. I'm going to give you my first five impressions of the first 5 hours. I actually played 6 hours, but, you know, it sounds cooler, I guess, if you put those together. I don't know. Presentation, number one, presentation. So the visuals, it's a 2D backgrounds that have great detail and a dark fantasy atmosphere. The lighting effects still create the illusion of 3D now and then, which is kind of cool. So really, I felt like nothing was sacrificed in having those fixed 2D backgrounds. However, when you zoom in on those details, you zoom in as far as the game will allow, the backgrounds get mysteriously fuzzy. They get a little bit blurry, and I'm just thinking to myself, well, these are fixed 2D backgrounds. Why would that even be an issue? Why would they, you know, not have, you know, produced those with the idea in mind that people might zoom in all the way? When you are like half zoomed out or all the way zoomed out, your sprites and characters, all that kind of stuff, they fit with the background wonderfully. But when you zoom in, there is just clearly a difference in the image fidelity between your sprites and the monsters and stuff that you're facing and the backgrounds. I guess it's not huge, but it's definitely present. So that was a little mysterious. But spell effects, they're still dazzling and cool despite being small on the screen when you're zoomed all the way out. But if you want, you can zoom in and see them, you know, a little bit more big and flashy. flashy. The character, enemy, and enemy models, they're all 3D. They look great. Though I have noticed that in parties with copied classes, like I have two wizards in my party, you might have trouble telling them apart because just their equipment sets just look somewhat similar. So the sound, let's talk about that a little bit. It's got live orchestra and choral material mixed with synth and samples of live, you know, choir and orchestra. So it's very very much like the original Infinity Engine games. If you're used to that kind of quality, they did the same thing there. It was a mix of samples and live recording and I think some synth stuff. So, I mean, it's very comparable to that. If you were happy with those, as I was enough to enjoy listening to the soundtracks quite often, then I think you'll be happy with the soundtrack for this game as well. Very enjoyable, very suited to the game. There's great sound effects, boots crunching, equipment rustling and jangling. I don't understand why I like those sounds. I just love those sounds. I love all the crunchy little bits that I get to hear when I'm pulling things off of dead bodies and putting them into my backpack. I don't know. It just gives me a strange joy deep inside of my heart. The sound and music, I noticed from almost the get-go, they bring a lot to create the ominous atmosphere of the early hours of the game. There's some kind of creepy, dark, ominous is the best word, supernatural kind of undertones to what's going on, and the music and sound just, wow, it just conveys that wonderfully. As well as any AAA game in terms of the sound effects and the music. This was, yeah, great stuff. I would have liked more character voice options. It did have more of them than the Dragon Age Inquisition voice options, which, man, don't even get me started on that. Those voices were stale and uncommitted to any real human being emotion throughout the entire game. And I felt like there were some better options in this one, but I really wanted, like, this crusty old wizard who was ready to destroy the world. And I think there was a voice like that in, or something along those lines in Neverwinter Nights, and I think in at least one or two of the Infinity Engine games, and I didn't get my crusty wizard option, which is a bit of a bummer. So, anyway, they were not as varied in flavor as previous Infinity Engine or BioWare games. I actually, in my case, just chose no voice for my character so that if I want to read out loud while I'm at home alone, which I never do, then I can do that. So anyway, but they're not bad. They're not bad voices. And I felt even from the little samples at the beginning, I was like, okay, I think we're going to get more flavor out of these voices than Dragon Age Inquisition gave us. All right, so I have to talk about my second major impression of this game, and that's the performance of the game. I mean the technical performance. Now, I don't know crap about computers, but I'll just tell you what my experience was. The minimum system requirements for this game jumped up a week before the game was released on GOG.com. My laptop cannot run it at the moment. I bought my laptop about 3 years ago. It's not a gaming laptop. It was just kind of, but I mean, at the time, I mean, it was marketed. I just bought it at like Best Buy or whatever, but it did say, you know, it's good for, you know, various needs and gaming and stuff like that. But gaming was one of the things I mentioned on there. And, you know, if you're a PC gamer, then you know that when you buy a computer like that at Best Buy that says good for gaming, that it's crap for gaming, you know, for most, you know, at least for what gamers would really want out of that experience. But it still has been able to play a good amount of even modern games, at least games that were out at the time that I bought it, and of course all the games, you know, pretty much previous to that. I mean, with some exceptions. But anyway, I'll try to remember to put the system requirements for that laptop and for my PC, the specs for my laptop and PC, and then the requirements for Pillars of Eternity in the video description notes, so you can check that out. But my laptop, it can't run it at the moment. I mean, it does, but it's like, as all get out. And but it runs fine on my PC. So you can look at the specs of my PC and see if that's useful. Either one of those is useful to you. Now, Neverwinter Nights 2. Also made by Obsidian, is a game that was famous when it came out for poor optimization. It had really high system requirements for the time compared to what you were getting visually and in terms of just all the widgets and goodies, you know, in the polish of the game. And that game runs on my laptop at mid to low range of quality settings. And the character models, I think, look just as good in Neverwinter Nights 2 as the character models look in Pillars of Eternity. But Neverwinter Nights 2 also had full 3D environments. So I am asking myself, what the crap happened? You know, I can run Neverwinter Nights 2 with full 3D, albeit not great looking 3D environments, but full 3D environments and a bunch of sprites that all look just as good as the sprites and character models and all that stuff in Pillars of Eternity. But I can't run Pillars of Eternity for crap on my computer. So that just smells like, and again, I don't know crap about computers, but that smells like really terrible optimization to me for it to be running that choppy. Very disappointing, very disappointing. I had really wanted this to be a portable game that I could take with me in my laptop when I find myself, you know, away from my house or whatever, and just wanted to do a little bit of gaming and stuff, like when I'm visiting family in another state or something, you know, or whatever. But that, it looks like right now that's not going to be an option. I'm hoping there'll be some patches that will improve optimization. I don't even know if that kind of thing is possible because I'm a computer idiot, but we'll see. We can hope. I can hope. In ignorance, I can hope. It's got very few bugs so far, and for an Obsidian Studios release, that's great. That it seems very polished for an Obsidian game so far. Hopefully patches will optimize things better soon, though, as I said. But yeah, that whole, like, the whole optimization problem, that seems like a major change in the vision presented, because I remember watching, I've been watching videos and stuff about this game as it's been getting updated, you know, since the Kickstarter began almost, and one of the things that was stated by Josh Sawyer, who's like head of development, I think, on this game, was that they wanted this game to be able to be run on older machines. And my computer's only 3 years old. Yeah, it's not a gaming PC, but still, I was thinking, okay, they got 2D backgrounds. I don't know. I feel like, because I don't know crap, but I feel like this game, I should be able to run this on my laptop. Ugh. Anyway, very disappointing. So number three, my third impression of the game is just the story and the script. It's got a dark tone, which I'm always game for. Your caravan at the very beginning is wiped out, and you learn soon after that you can interface with departed and recycled souls. Death is a major theme of this game. The dialogue is also peppered with references to lore. So if you're into like world building and like discovering new cultures of games and societies and what makes them tick and all that kind of stuff, I think you'll be interested in that part of this game, at least what I've experienced in the first 6 hours. And also the characters you meet. I'm more of a character guy than a story guy. The characters that you meet, including the ones that you have the chance to add to your party, which I've had three so far that I've had the chance to add to my party, I find them easy to care about, or at least easy to want to know more about. Yeah, I want to know kind of, well, what's their story? They're hiding something. They got something weird going on there, you know? Or this guy, oh man, he's got like a tragic background. He's just looking for a place to belong, you know? I really felt like I could connect with these characters. I either cared about them or just wanted them around because I want to know more about them. Now, one thing about this game compared to like your AAA RPGs right now is that instead of like these big lavish cutscenes, these cinematic cutscenes, they have what they call scripted interactions, where they like the game map goes away and like this old tome looking thing, or like a scroll looking thing, it's like this brownish looking papery thing, shows up, and it's got like this illustration that just kind of like bleeds into existence, and then some text on the other side that you need to read to describe what's going on. So this will be like what comes up when you're about to like you come up to the edge of, I don't know, like a big canyon or something, and you go up there, and instead of like showing some animation of you, you know, climbing around or doing something, you know, this will come up and it'll show, give you options of what you can do. It factors in your present equipment, your stats and skills and stuff like that. So you have different options according to the different abilities of your party members. And you can fail or succeed in these scripted interactions based on your stats and equipment. So it's not just like this pure choose your own adventure story time, it's still factoring in very much the party that you have made. And I think it's really cool. It's got this kind of nice ancient kind of feel to it, where you're like, it brings that like a storytelling vibe that I wouldn't have expected, that I really enjoyed. You know, I can't even describe it. I just like it. It makes me feel good in my heart. All right. What else? There is plenty of reading to do in general in the game, I gotta say. Oh, and on the scripted interactions thing, I gotta say, sometimes I prefer reading over watching a boring cutscene that I would rather skip past, but I can't because I have to at least know what the plot is. But at least in these scripted interactions, I can just go, choose, move on, you know? I still get all the story I want, but I'm not waiting for these, you know, boring characters or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So there is plenty of reading in the game, especially when using your Watcher abilities on random people. And that's not an ability that you really trigger. It's just some random people you'll walk up to and you talk to them, and that's the only option. They don't talk to you. It just brings open this option to kind of engage and connect with their spirit or something like that. And those are really long, like these, like through two or three big long paragraphs that you often have to scroll down and read through. And I am not clear up to this point on whether or not it's necessary for me to be reading all of these things. I would really rather not. The first few are interesting, but after that, I'm like, if this isn't, you know, like actually pertinent to the main story or some side quest I'm going to be given, I'm not really interested in this really lengthy snapshot of this person's soul and what it's experienced in the past. I think some people will really dig that. You know, the people that like taking all the books off the bookshelves in Skyrim and reading every last page, I think this is the equivalent of that. That's where they're going to kind of get that itch scratched in this game. Although I have found some books with some stuff to read in them too so far. But anyway, I hope they're not necessary to the plot because I did start skipping them not long ago. All right, so let's talk about the gameplay. I think it's great. I'm having a great time with it so far. The artificial intelligence of the characters is limited. They're planning with a future patch to add more sophisticated AI options for each of your characters, but right now it's basically like you select all of them and then you hit attack on the guy you want to attack and they all just kind of start auto-attacking the same guy over and over again with their basic weapon or whatever. I think I saw somewhere that maybe there's some abilities that you can plug into that default action as well, but I haven't found that yet, but I think that's probably a good possibility. But it's very limited at this point. If you want, like, your spellcasters to cast a specific spell, or if you want somebody to be healed or something like that, you're going to have to do all of that manually. So that does make for a bit of micromanagement, although there are cheats for the game, so you could potentially, I would guess, limit your party to just two or three or however many you feel like you want to micromanage, and then just level them up a little bit more so that they're ready for whatever challenges you need to face. But it's great combat, and like I said, it's pause and pause play, whatever you call it. I don't know, there's some name for it. Pause and play and I don't know. But you pause the game, you give your orders, you watch them get carried out, and then you pause again if you want to give specific orders, or you can just wait and see what happens for a little while and how the battle's going with them auto-attacking. Let's see here. There are some enchanting and crafting systems that I haven't gotten into yet. I like just discovered the enchanting system in my menu, and I know there's a crafting system, but I haven't been exposed to it yet. But I'm really excited about the potential for that stuff. The rules system has been very much streamlined, and there are tooltips freaking all over the place. I love it. I love it. If there's ever like a vocab word that I don't understand, chances are really good that I just got to hover my mouse over that thing and a little box pops up and I can sometimes click on that box to get a bigger box to get even more information. I mean, it's, yeah, very, very helpful for someone that, was really having a hard time with the Baldur's Gate games. And of course, on top of that, it's a simpler rule system, much easier. They're not using these strange terms of rounds and stuff like that. Everything's measured in like seconds of the game as it plays out. Really nice. Let's see here. Magic. Magic is blended with your equipment, and you cast using spell points, which I think is kind of cool. You know, like you can basically you can have like a, you get like a grimoire, it's called. It's a spell book, and it can hold like four slots of each spell level, and so you get a different spell in each of those slots, and then like you'll have like 3 points to put toward casting level 1 spells that you've slotted in your grimoire, plus all the ones that you know but that just aren't currently slotted into the slots of your grimoire. So like if you've played the Infinity Engine games and you realize in the middle of a battle, oh crap, I didn't prep the right number of this kind of spell for this battle, you're a lot less likely to run into those kind of scenarios. So I'm very happy with how magic works in this game. Let's see here. So far the easy difficulty is more forgiving compared to Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale, at least the part one of each of those game series. But this is still really early in the game for me. It's 6 hours. I've heard people are getting anywhere between 30 and 80 hours of this game. And there's still a lot of questions I have about status effects. So far, I've had one status effect experience, and it only lasted about 8 seconds. Whereas, like in Baldur's Gate, those things would just stick with you until your character, I think, saved, in some kind of rolling going on behind the, computer business, I don't know what I'm saying. Anyway, I think that console gamers who like Dragon Age Origins will likely find this to be a good starting point for Infinity Engine type games, but check those system requirements with whatever machine you plan on playing them on. Now, in terms of relevance, you know, when I look at games and movies and stuff like that, I try to see, you know, is there anything in there that's worth talking about, especially when you compare it to the Bible, you know, what lines up with the Bible, what doesn't, you know, and as far as, like, spiritual, moral, theological, you know, issues. And I think there's going to be a ton to talk about in this game, but right now I feel like it's too early for me to comment a whole lot. I can say right now that religion and violent religious conflict are a significant part of the world of Pillars of Eternity. Also, death and reincarnation are both very key concepts. I was a little bit surprised to realize that it's not in this game, with the religious conflict I've seen so far, it's not monotheists fighting amongst each other. Usually that's what you see, is like whatever the monotheistic religion is that somewhat resembles like the Catholic Church or some kind of traditional Protestant church. Or, I mean, more the Catholic Church in terms of the authority structure, you know. Usually like, oh, they're the root of all evil and stuff like that, and they're the ones that are trying to, like, you know, destroy everybody or whatever. But in this one, it's not one singular monotheistic religion that's being, like, oppressive and stuff. It's like these polytheists fighting over their choice, their god of choice. As far as I can tell, everybody in the world acknowledges that there are multiple gods in this world, but they're still fighting over each other over their particular god of choice, which I think is really interesting. I'm very curious where that's going to go. I predict that there's going to be lots of commentary on religion in general, and then also subtle commentary maybe regarding specific religions and philosophical topics. I will probably do another video on that in the future, maybe after I've played the game. I'll probably continue to record footage of the game as I'm playing it and then edit together something when I'm done that kind of talks in more detail about the themes presented in the game. You can get it on Steam or GOG.com for $45, or you can get the Champion Edition for $60. That's what I got. And that includes a soundtrack for the game and, this is why I got the Champion Edition, a behind-the-scenes making-of documentary about the entire process of making this game. Now, they're still working on that, but they say it's coming soon on the GOG.com website. I'm very excited. I love behind-the-scenes features, and I love that they're being included more and more in video games. So, $45 or $60, whichever way you want to go. I think, so far, if I were to go back in time and talk to myself, I'd say, Peter, yeah, it's worth it. It's worth $60. This is very promising. Let's see here. I had some other notes, I thought, but maybe... that's it. Yeah. If I were to go back in time, I'd say, Peter, buy this game, but maybe wait. Maybe wait a month or until you're done playing any other games that, you know, really enjoyable games that you want to play. I mean, don't wait until you have no games to play, because it's definitely worth playing soon. But maybe wait a month or two and see what kind of patches get introduced to the game that might tweak some of the things, maybe improve performance or something. It's not like something you need to do now. And especially since, like, I'm a casual gamer when it comes to these, like, more hardcore pause and play PC RPGs like Baldur's Gate and stuff like that. This wouldn't be, like, number one on my list. And it is disappointing that it's not, you know, I'm not going to be able to play it on my laptop for the foreseeable future. But I would tell myself, Peter, wait a little bit. And then I would wait, and then I'd say, thank you, time-traveling Peter, and I'd have a better day. Okay, that's it. I want to remind you guys to check out the other podcasts in the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, and the Untold podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Well, this week I'm taking a break from examining a specific passage of the Bible, and I'm instead going to touch on something that I think is relevant to us geeks while using the Bible to try and inform my thinking. Today I want to talk about part one of my thoughts on the themes presented in Dragon Age Inquisition, and this audio that you're about to hear is just lifted from the video, which you can watch the entire thing anytime you want at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. So here's part one of my thoughts of the themes and ideas being presented in Dragon Age Inquisition. Inquisition. Going to be talking today about Dragon Age Inquisition. Now, this game's been out for a while. It's gotten multiple Game of the Year awards. I'm a Dragon Age fan, especially of Dragon Age Origins. Yeah, felt kind of iffy about Dragon Age 2. And for the most part, enjoyed Dragon Age Inquisition. It had kind of some bumps along the way for my personal preferences for like an RPG of this kind, you know. But that's not really what I'm going to talk about right now. What I've noticed in BioWare's games is that they like to play with different themes, social themes, theological themes, philosophical issues. They like to really bring those into their games, and if not give some commentary, at least not directly. I think sometimes there's some indirect commentary and betrayal of their personal collective views on some of these issues, but they also give the player a lot of choice. Not always the choices that I would like when I'm interacting with these kinds of issues that they're bringing up, but they still give a good variety. So a BioWare game these days always seems to be pretty good for looking at social issues, you know? And so that's what I want to do as I kind of reflect on my experience with Dragon Age Inquisition. In a previous video about Dragon Age, I talked about some of those issues that they typically bring up while looking at the fictional religion of Dragon Age Inquisition. Now I'd like to play a couple of scenes, actually more than a few scenes from my playthrough of Dragon Age Inquisition that I think demonstrate the theology of the world a bit, and then I'll give some thoughts after each one of those clips, some thoughts and reactions. Now, as an overview of my thoughts for this video, I'd say that Dragon Age Inquisition presents a world without Jesus. Now, obviously, they're going to do that because it's a fantasy world, but what I mean by that is it's a world without the type of influence and action and significance that the life of Jesus brought into our world and our lives as humans. And I'll talk about, you know, that and differentiate a little bit with that as I get to each individual clip. And in several instances, I think, in Inquisition, we see what naturally happens in life and in relationships without Jesus factored in. Now, I should note, I'm going to talk about my experience and my choices in the game. There are many that I didn't see, so in no way do I consider this to be some kind of like exhaustive evaluation of the entire possible content of the game on these issues, not even close. It's just the experience given to me in response to my choices that I made during the game. Also, I want to say that Dragon Age Inquisition had some good values being presented throughout the game. I am specifically going to focus here on the views represented in the game that differ from biblical Christianity, but that's not like my way of saying that the creators of this game have some malicious agenda or intent or are especially depraved in some way, you know. In fact, I applaud them for incorporating the themes that they do because it means at least that we all have a chance to practice discerning our way through them. Now, if you haven't played all the way through Dragon Age Inquisition, there are going to be some spoilers here. Not of the main plot, which I don't think is all that fantastic anyway, but of the character subplots that are going on. And a lot of people play these games for those. So if you don't want spoilers on any of those, then you want to come back to this video some other time, because I'm just going to be open with these videos and their content here. Also, the game that this is taken from does have, I believe, an M rating for mature. Now, I don't think in the clips that I'm showing here there's going to be anything that would be M rated, but there might, just in case there's something I forgot, I just wanted to forewarn you that this footage is taken from an M rated game, so fair warning there. Alright, so let's look at the first clip.
Though all before me is shadow, yet shall the Maker be my guide. I shall not be left to wander the drifting roads of the beyond. For there is no darkness in the Maker's light, and nothing that he has wrought shall be lost.
A prayer for you.
For those we have lost, and those I am afraid to lose.
How can you still have faith?
I've questioned it at times, but I found comfort in faith when life offered little. Corypheus will retaliate. It's only a matter of time. We must draw strength wherever we can.
Okay, now this was interesting. Colin says, I've questioned it at times, his faith, but I've found comfort in faith when life offered little. So despite his questions, he hangs on to his faith because it gives him comfort? How does he know that comfort's not like delusional or some kind of self-deception? He also says that since danger is coming, we must draw strength wherever we can. And this, again, I think implies that he hangs on to his faith, not because it's necessarily true, but because it gives him this feeling of strength. This depiction of quote-unquote faith is pretty common in entertainment culture. And it almost seems to be written by people who themselves... I won't make any statement there. I'm not sure where that sentence was going. But let me just differentiate from the common idea of faith that we see in entertainment culture from faith as used in the New Testament. The Greek New Testament word for faith should almost be translated as trust. It's not this blind faith. That's not what the Greek means, but it's a faith that considers the evidence and makes a decision to trust based on what is true and real, just like people can earn your trust. The Bible makes the case that God is worthy of our trust, worthy of placing our faith in Him based on what He has done in the past, how He has revealed Himself, and the streams of evidence that He has left that point to Him as being trustworthy. Now, most religions, I've noticed, have some point at which investigation is discouraged. But the Bible, by contrast, speaks favorably of even those who investigate its own claims. Because there are some religions that will say, yeah, you should definitely investigate truth and make sure that what you believe is true, but they're kind of meaning that about other religious systems other than their own. But the Bible, we see, honors those who even investigate its own claims. Acts 17, verses 10 through 11 says, "The brothers immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. And when they arrived, they went into the Jewish synagogue. Now these Jews were more noble than those in Thessalonica." Why? It says, "They received the word with all eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see if these things were so." All right, next clip.
"I wanted to talk about you.
You know, I'm from Tevinter. Wasn't a slave. I was a soldier, but women joined the ranks under a different program. When they found out I was passing, it got ugly. I ran, met Ball near the border, and ended up here. Not a life I'd wish on everyone, but it'll do."
"Why did you decide to live as a man?"
"I didn't decide anything. I've been like this my whole life. My parents wanted me to marry up. They tried to find me a nice merchant's son. Every day, put on a dress, look into my father's shaving mirror, and just hate myself."
"How did your family react when you started?"
"My mother wanted to throw me out. She said if I didn't marry well, I was dooming the family to slavery. He was happy to take the money I set as a soldier, though. Not that it mattered in the end. My father. When I was little, he'd angle his mirror down so I could pretend to shave, just like him. He never said anything, but I think he knew."
"If you had the chance to use magic, would you change all the way?"
"What? No. I don't want any magic like that within 10 yards of my body. When I was younger, I don't know. Everyone has silly dreams. In Tevinter, dreams like that get you killed. Bull helped me make a good life. Nice armor and a well-placed sock, and I'm happy."
"I'd like to know more about Krem."
"He's a good soldier, and a better second in command. The troops need someone to complain to when I'm being a hard ass. He's good for that."
"Don't have any problems with him being a woman?"
"He's not a woman. Look, I've got horns. You can shoot fire out of your ass. We're probably not the best people to go around deciding what's normal. Krem's a good man. I don't give a nug's ass that it's a little harder for him to piss standing up."
Okay, so that was two scenes. I'm going to spend a little bit of extra time here, I think. Not because this felt like a really pervasive kind of like theme throughout the game. I think it just takes maybe a little bit extra verbiage to kind of unpack and take a look at. But we've got two conversations here dealing with Krem's gender or sexual status. In terms of when I spoke to Krem herself, she responded, you know, she said, I didn't decide anything. I felt like there was some defensiveness, a good amount of defensiveness coming from both Krem and Bull in these conversations. You know, Krem was wanting to communicate that her state as one who feels more comfortable living as a male is not a choice, but her natural state. But, and I think that's why she jumps on, I didn't decide anything. This is naturally who I am. But, you know, I didn't ask, my character didn't ask when she decided to feel drawn toward living as a man. I didn't, you know, imply that her feelings about this were a decision of her own. I asked why she decided to start living as a man. So she really, to respond to that question, should have simply said, well, because I've always felt like that is more natural to who I am. And instead, she gets defensive, as Bull does as well, I think, and adds things to my character's words that really aren't there. I noticed it, and you know, this is one time where, like, the freaking boring delivery of the voice that I chose, and I assume, you know, the other voices in this game too, I just felt like the voice I chose was just like all of, he was uncommitted to like any kind of heavy emotion throughout the game, you know? And this is one instance where that should have worked in his favor. He seemed to be approaching this with genuine, you know, curiosity and not like some judgment, you know, from the outset or whatever. But they still seemed, both Bull and Krem seemed to respond really defensively. And that seemed to happen almost instantly with both of these characters. I didn't feel like there was any way I could inquire about Krem's unique gender status without getting a somewhat angry defensive reaction. Bull became very stern with me and insisted that Krem is a real man. Krem leaps on my use of the word decide and seems to think I was saying that she decided to have the sexual tendencies that she does, when what I really asked, as I said, was when did she decide to start passing as a man? And she actually describes in her own story how she didn't always pass for a man and at some point did make the choice to begin doing so. Now, I can only speculate, but it seems as though this defensiveness may come from Krem and Bull both basing Krem's self-worth on assigning her some kind of definitive label or status, such as in this case being a real man, quote-unquote. Similar in some ways to how geeks can sometimes base their self-worth on geek cred. You know, I know Tolkien better than you do, or my opinion of, you know, video games or movies or whatever is more valid than yours. You know, we can kind of get all, you know, hot and bothered when someone disagrees with us, you know, about... Is hot and bothered the right expression? That's not like a sexual thing, is it? It might be. If so, that's not what I meant. But anyway, but I don't think identity or self-worth comes from any tendencies we may be born with. Whether we're born with tendencies towards same-sex attraction or loving Star Trek, those tendencies do not define us. And seeking identity from them only leads to insecurity. Instead, I'd argue that every individual's worth comes from two things that come to mind. A, the fact that they bear the image of God. They are made to reflect who God is in some way and are a walking, talking replication of some facet of who God is. That gives humanity tremendous worth, gives each individual tremendous worth. Genesis 1:26a, the first half of that anyway, says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness." And there's some debate on exactly what that refers to, but the point is there is something of who God is that we were made to reflect, and that I think gives each and every human huge significance and worth. And then B, I think that our individual worth comes from the fact that God himself considers each one of us valuable enough, excuse me, to be tortured and killed for, regardless of whether or not their sexual tendencies, sinful patterns, or personal interests and passions reflect what is normal. That which is normal is, you know, it's not even really on the table here. Romans 5:8, "But God shows his love for us in that once we got ourselves cleaned up, Christ died for us." No, it says, Romans 5:8 says, "But God showed his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." People are born with all kinds of tendencies toward all kinds of things, some of which are outside of God's will, many of which are outside of God's will. It's my natural tendency to be selfish and prideful, but those tendencies don't affect my essential worth. And because Jesus paid the penalty for my acts of selfishness and pride, placing his record of perfection over top of my own, those tendencies are not the basis for my identity either. This is true for everyone who trusts Jesus to be perfect and righteous on their behalf and pay the penalty due for their sin. 1 Corinthians 6:9, these are all from the ESV, by the way.
says, "Or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. And such were some of you. But you were washed. You were sanctified. You were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ by the Spirit of our God." Doesn't say that you got yourself cleaned up. It's by the Spirit of our God in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. And it's not that the believers Paul is writing to no longer have tendencies toward any of those things. They obviously do, because Paul's letters are largely about teaching Christians how to leave their sinful patterns behind. So these kinds of sins, all those things I listed, are still going on inside the church at this point, and Paul's addressing these things. What he's saying here is that those who trust in Jesus to pay for and deal with their sin are no longer defined by their natural tendencies. Before they were, but in Christ they are defined as royal children of God now. Galatians 3:26-28 says, "For in Christ Jesus you are all sons of God through faith. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is no male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." Now, maybe other people will still define us by our tendencies. They probably will. I think that's just kind of the natural way we do things in life. But God's evaluation of us is the one that matters. So I think to make any progress in these kinds of gender/sexuality conversations, this issue of identity probably has to be sorted out first. And therein lies the problem with, you know, this kind of conversation in Dragon Age Inquisition. You know, without Jesus in the equation, all we have left to be defined by objectively and ultimately is our actions. So to feel good about ourselves, we have to lower the bar and defensively justify ourselves before others and try to push our kind of moral code as the one that really counts, you know. So yeah, it really gets messy and complicated with all that kind of stuff when you take Jesus out of the equation. And that's all the time I have for talking about the themes of Dragon Age Inquisition this week. Stay tuned next week on the podcast for the second half of that, I was going to say discussion, that stuff.
Incoming transmission.
Hey, Peter, John Wilkerson here. Wanted to respond to something that you mentioned in your review of the machine. I saw the machine, too, and you mentioned, you know, why was she walking around in the nude? Why was she dancing in the nude and things like that? I think that that was supposed to represent kind of innocence. If you think about it, young children, they don't realize that walking around nude is something that is viewed as taboo. It's not something that we normally do, and so they're innocent of that. And even ourselves, when we see young children walking around nude, it doesn't really, at least in our homes anyway, it doesn't really bother us that much. And so maybe that represented the AI's progression from one of a childlike state to more of an adult state. Just some thoughts on that, something that just kind of struck me as you were mentioning those scenes. Would love to hear your feedback on that. Maybe this is something that would be better in the forums, but hey, just thought I would send in a voicemail and provide you some immediate feedback on that. Keep up the great work. I got like 7 seconds left, and happy Pi Day. Bye.
Hey, John, thank you. That was really interesting. I hadn't even remotely considered that possibility. I can see that as possibly actually being the intention of the filmmakers. I wasn't like tuned into that possibility, just because I tend to be just kind of sensitive about like sexualized stuff that's going on in movies. And I was like, just thinking, what in the world? It seems a bit naive on their part. If that was what was intended, for them to, you know, not think that, hey, you know, we're also going to show this attractive woman, you know, in this really kind of like skin-tight, pseudo-nude kind of whatever it is that she's wearing. But that is an interesting thought, so I appreciate you bringing that up. Hey, everybody else, Feedback, feedback. You can do just what John did and give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, anything else that we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind that you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? Because I could definitely provide you one of those. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we've got to hear from you to do that. So you can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to keep talking. I was looking at my notes here. I was like, okay, it's another transition at this point, right? No, there's nothing. Hey, there are tons of new articles at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I went off-grid. There was no podcast last week. And in the time that I was off-grid working on Spirit Blade or World of Shadows, which is the third part of the Spirit Blade trilogy, for more information, go to SpiritBlade.com or .net. I don't think we have the new website's not up yet. But anyway, oh, my gosh. Tons of great new articles by our contributors at Christian Geek Central that you can check out. Lots of great stuff. So if you haven't been there in the last week or two, go ChristianGeekCentral.com. Lots of cool articles that relate to several different facets of geekery, most of which I would not even remotely cover because it's stuff that I don't happen to be into. So if you're interested in getting a different voice about different geek things than what you're hearing me yapping at you all the time, go to ChristianGeekCentral.com. Also, like I said, the videos, both videos, the Dragon Age thing and the Pillars of Eternity thing, you can find those right now at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral if I've done my job right. All right. And please do, when you're there, like, even if you don't plan to watch the whole video because you hear that content here and that's the way you prefer to get it, if you go to that channel, I would love it if you would like, share, or even subscribe, because those little tidbits in funny little ways do help to grow the number of viewers that we have for those videos. So that would just be awesome. I want to remind you guys, if you want to have a voice on this podcast or at Christian Geek Central, send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. Tell me what you're into, and we will get you plugged in. I would love to find a way to get your voice represented as well. Let's see here. I got a note here. Oh, we've already missed the 25th. The 25th was Tolkien Reading Day. Is there some other kind of thing coming up? Some kind of like geeky holiday? Let me check my notes. Nope, I missed Pi Day. But we do have, what do you call it? Palm Sunday. Hello, Peter. Yeah, remember all the geeky holidays. Good job, Franson. All right. So Palm Sunday this Sunday, then Easter next week. And I totally missed remembering Pi Day. I've been trying to kind of, just for fun, incorporate little notes about geek holidays throughout the year. I put a bunch of notes in my calendar to help me remember, so hopefully that'll be of use or at least nominal interest to you as we move forward. Let's see. I think that is it for this week. Next week, if God wants it to happen, what is happening next week? Let me look at my notes again here. That can't be right. Palm Sunday. Da, 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 da. Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Next week, I'm going to start highlighting some of the websites from ChristianGeekCentral.com that we link to that I think are, you know, really cool. And I hope to, over the course of time, you know, highlight all of them and just kind of help you guys get aware of some of the cool Christian geekery that's going on across the web. And then also my part two of my thoughts on the themes and ideas being presented in Dragon Age Inquisition. Stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 if you want to start from the beginning. Till then, thank you so much for hanging out for this podcast. I hope you have a great week and that you join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Peter Frenson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
Okay, just finished up Farscape Season 3, Episode 302, Sons and Lovers. This is, you know, you remember that episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where it's like Riker
finally finds out that Deanna Troi has, like, been sleeping with, what's his dude, Data, and he, like, just totally loses it, and he just gets pissed off, is like, you skank, and he just totally, like, wails on her and then almost commits suicide, and no, you don't remember that episode because it never happened. It only happens in Farscape. You know, and however you feel about these characters, there's a good chance you feel about these characters. You love them, you hate them. I'm not even going to talk really about what would normally be in another show, the main conflict, which was the freak of the week, lady with the yellow eyes, who was actually a bomb and a magnet and made the storm try to destroy them. Whatever the crap, who cares? That was just, you know, something to muck things up, to heighten the tension and bring out the emotions and that these characters are feeling about each other and the situations they're in. The main story is not about the sons, as it's spelled in the written title, S-U-N-S. It's about the lovers, you know. It's about... There's a little bit of development with John and Aaron. Mostly, it's just kind of, I think, a reminder that their relationship, they're kind of like... Neither one of them is looking anywhere else. They're not looking at anybody else. They have each other in mind. They care deeply about each other. But there's still difficulty in them having a functioning relationship because of, you know, how different they are and just the different worlds they come from, you know. There wasn't a whole lot of really fascinating stuff there. I mean, the main story is Dargo and Chiana and Joffe. And what's so interesting, you know, when I first started watching this episode, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a tough one to get through. Because I thought that the main plot, I forgot, I thought the main plot was Magnet Chick, you know? But it's, you know, once I realized, oh man, this is that episode where, like, Dargo finds out and, like, burns Joffe in the chest with the love tattoos. Tattoos, come on, get just a little bit more creative writing staff. Well, I guess they kind of have to do that just so that we can understand what the equivalent is, you know, really easily. I don't know. But anyway, or maybe that's just kind of how it sounds with translator microbes. It's like, oh yeah, John would just get it. It's slightly off, but it's the same basic concept. Not ink, but burned into your flesh, like true Luxans would do things. and now I lost my train of thought here. What was I talking about? Oh yeah. So interesting, the character of Joffe. You know, he's already left. You know, at the end of this episode, we don't actually see him leave, but if I remember correctly, he's not in the next episode, and he's gone now, you know. And again, it's that kind of whole idea that they had at the inception of the show, that it would be this revolving door of cast members, main ensemble cast members coming and going, some staying for long stretches, some for short, and you can, it's really hard to predict, you know. I mean, we've got, you know, for example, we've got Stark, you know, who now he's already kind of feeling like he's part of this main cast, but, you know, he's not been a consistent presence, and he certainly wasn't there from the very beginning. Neither was Chiana, for that matter, you know. It's just so interesting, though, how Joffe, before we knew his name was Joffe, I think, you know, he was just Dargo's son. And we knew that Dargo was desperate to find his son, you know. And when we saw the first image of him, it was when he was just this little, like, toddler-type, baby-type age, you know. And we just felt for Dargo, you know. I mean, well, I did. And then when his wish finally comes true, you know, what are they going to do with that? You know, they have to do something with that, you know. They can't just let everybody be happy. And so I just think it's so ironic that the son that he was yearning to find for so long, he finds, and then that son destroys his life. You know, I mean, ah, wonderful. Wonderful. You know, and there were two characters that I kind of dislike in this episode, Joffe and Magnet Chick. And at first I was thinking that I hated Joffe for the same reason as Magnet Chick, which is I just find her indescribably annoying for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it's the actress. Maybe she just reminds me of, like, some high school actress and that I knew in high school that would, the kind of choices she would make, and just kind of like the drama she would bring into a room, and just like, oh, I didn't like that yellow-eyed chick. I just found her annoying. I didn't find her threatening from the very beginning, even before she was on the wall enchanting, you know. But as I thought about it, I thought, no, I don't think it's the actor that plays Joffy that's bothering me or rubbing me the wrong way, as sometimes happens on this show. I think it's the character. I think from the very beginning, what we saw with Joffy is that he does not, and what played out and what he admitted at the end of this episode, is that he does not have the sense of honor and loyalty that his father does. I mean, he's so different from his father. He's just like a child in many ways, you know. He kind of thinks of himself as tough. He's kind of like a guy who's coming of age who hasn't come of age yet, you know. He's kind of in that preteen, you know, kind of age or early teen kind of age, you know, where he just thinks he knows everything about life and stuff, but he really doesn't have any wisdom, you know. He's just a fool. And selfish and ignorant, you know. And so I really enjoyed them playing that out and allowing him to, it was just, you know, as much as I hate it, as much as it was hard to watch scenes with him in it and kind of dislike him while I'm watching him in scenes, this episode and episodes prior to this one, but then to see that play out, it's just, that's a neat thing. I really also value this episode for the furthering of the relationship between John and Dargo. You know, you see Dargo just at a really low point, and John's right there with him, you know, and there's difficulty there. It's not perfect. He doesn't have the right words, and Dargo gets pissed at him, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, the one character that Dargo was able to connect with during this episode on any level was John, you know, and so you think about, you know, those kinds of friendships or family relationships or whatever that maybe you've had in your life, you know, those difficult conversations, difficult seasons of life, and sharing those difficult seasons with another person just creates a deepness that wasn't there before in that relationship. And so that's what they, I think, are trying to do here. And for me, they're absolutely succeeding. I mean, I just continue to love watching. I think I said this a long time ago on Farscape Shawarma, but for me, this show, it primarily hangs on John and Aaron, but the second relationship in my mind that is so vital to this show and how it works for me is the relationship between John and Dargo, that just kind of bromance, you know, or whatever you want to call it. You know, I just love that friendship and just how it continues to deepen as they experience life together throughout the course of the series. So, anyway, that's it. Next time, what do we got? Oh, that's right. We got a two-parter coming up. Self-Inflicted Wounds, Part 1. This two-parter is another big game changer. So, yeah, we'll check it out next time.